AOA is brought to you by Cinex Matron Synthetic Diesel Engine Oils, oils that run smart.
Informing America's farmers and ranchers, this is AOA, produced by the American Ag Radio Network. Here's your host, Mike Adams.
Welcome to AOA This Morning, folks. I'm Mike Pearson, sitting in for Mike Adams, but I really appreciate all of you taking the time to join us today. I'm excited for today's show. We're going to be talking here in just a little bit with Ed Valley, taking a look at what's going on with weather down in South America. Then we're going to talk about trade. This is in the news again. The Biden administration really set its first policy speech with regard to trade with China yesterday. We're going to talk with Simon Lester, a trade attorney, about what that look might mean for agriculture as we go here out into the rest of 2021 and beyond. And finally, we're going to wrap up the show talking with Jeff Ryan, a cattleman and corn grower up in Northeast Iowa. We're going to talk about how harvest looks up there in his part of the world. But first, we're going to start this day's conversation by talking to the new president of the National Corn Growers Association, Chris Edgington. Chris, thanks for taking the time to talk to us today.
Oh, my pleasure, Mike. Glad to be here.
You bet. So, Chris, you are up in north central Iowa, the St. Ansgar area, and you were just moved into the president's role here on Friday. Is that right?
That's correct. We use our fiscal year as a transition time, as board members transition off, new board members transition in, and that's also when the officers change roles. So I moved from first vice president to president.
So, Chris, looking at the year ahead, National Corn Growers Association working on behalf of corn growers across the country, what are the priorities you're hearing about that you think the organization is going to have to emphasize this year?
Well, Mike, there's many. As usual, we've always got issues to work on. And one of the ones right up front right now that we're staring at, there's actually a couple of them, but this attack on the tax. On the tax deal, the stepped up basis, the inheritance tax, the capital gains, the 1031 exchanges, all these ideas that have been floated out there to help pay for, you know, some of the legislation are going to be a real challenge, not only for agriculture, but small business America in general, family business in America, whether it's a grocery store, the restaurant, food store. A lot of those are multi-generational, just the same as we are in production agriculture. And so this tax deal is definitely right at the front. We've got ethanol, you know, that's on the burner and trade and WOTUS and, you know, not too far down the road. It's not at the front of the pack today, but it won't be before too long. We'll be talking about a new farm bill.
That's true. Time just keeps marching on. Chris, I want to circle back to the tax issue because you touched on something huge, which is that this impacts more than just farmers. This is going to go after really anybody who owns a capital-intensive business they'd like to pass on to their kids. With that being the case, has NCGA been able to find partnerships outside of agriculture with organizations that are also concerned about the change in step-up basis to some of the other tax policies coming out of this Biden administration?
Yeah, absolutely. There's a lot of people working on it. You've got the Small Business Administration, you've got NFIB, you've got the small town, the Chamber of Commerce's. Because not only would it affect my farm here in Iowa, but the family restaurant in New York or in Los Angeles or the grocery store, the shoe store, the clothing store in those places could also, you know, they're pretty capital intense. There, a lot of them are multi-generational, it's going to have an effect on them as well.
It certainly is. And you touched on ethanol as well, Chris. I know you've been active helping get the good word of ethanol out there to the American people. Looking out to this next year, I mean, we're seeing people come back on the roads after the pandemic shutdown. How are you feeling about ethanol as a whole right now?
Well, I mean, our feeling about ethanol is not changed. It's a fantastic product that we need to use more of. And so we're continually messaging people about the values that it brings. It's a dollar value to the consumer, It's an air quality, water quality value to the environment, and it's a renewable product that's grown and produced right here in the United States. And so we're not dependent upon any other region to get it. So we continually work with the EPA on this issue, on making sure that the 15 billion gallons is the RVO number that they bring out. It needs to be 15 billion gallons, and we want it to be there. But we've also introduced a bill that Representative Sherry Bustos did. It's called the Next Generation Fuels Act. And what this is going to do, it's going to allow us to transition to a higher blend of ethanol, so that the automakers will be able to transition to the higher compression engines that they want to build and need to build for air quality improvements and mileage improvements. And so it's a win for both the auto industry and the ethanol industry, and it'll eventually and definitely be a win for the consumer down the road.
It certainly will. It's tough to beat those prices, you know, the ethanol prices when you pull up to a gas pump. Chris, what's your take on how that bill is going to fare? I mean, we've heard kind of mixed messages coming out of this Biden administration so far. Have you had a chance yet? And I know you're new in the role, but have you been able to have contact with EPA Administrator Michael Regan as of yet?
Actually, surprisingly, Mike, the very first call I had was with Administrator Regan. And our call on Friday was all around 15 billion gallons needs to be 15 billion gallons on the RVO that they've yet to release for last year, let alone the release for, you know, the current one that needs to come out. So we had a good conversation. I can't say that I felt totally confident we will get our number, but we did have a conversation about it. And his message to us was he wants to work with the RFS. He wants to get back to where it needs to be and go there and get to those numbers, because as a protection agency, they do see the environmental benefits of ethanol and what we do for air quality, water quality. And so I think we've got somebody that, while we may not always agree on the number or the issue, I think we've got somebody we're going to be able to at least have an open and frank discussion with.
That's good to hear. You know, you mentioned the environmental quality, and that's one of the things that always jumps out at me as a key benefit for ethanol. You know, there's an oil leak right now from a pipeline in California, and it's washing ashore and causing all these troubles. And we just don't have that with ethanol. If it leaks, you know, some fish get drunk. You know, it's not the end of the world. But Chris, while we got you, I also wanted to talk about your work on the market access team. There, you've been involved with NCGA on that, helping make sure that American corn growers can find markets overseas. In your role as president, what are you excited about on the export front?
Well, there's a lot of things to be excited about because people want our product. You know, whether it's Mexico and Japan and South Korea and China, who is now once again in the market big, they want our product. It's a high quality product. It's reliable on delivery and in quality and at a fair price. And yet we've got lots of opportunities in other places, Southeast Asia, some other parts of Europe, parts of Africa that are looking to, you know, everybody wants to take a step up in their standard of living. And the first thing they found in China was once they get a few more dollars, they eat more meat. Well, to eat more meat, you need more corn for the most part. And so it works out really well for everybody.
That's what we like to hear. Well, we'll talk more with Chris Edgington on this weekend's edition of This Week in Agribusiness. Certainly appreciate him taking the time to talk to us today.
AOA is brought to you by Synex Premium Diesel. Synex Premium Diesel, diesel that doesn't mess around.
About 80% of farmers use propane to dry their grain. If you're part of that 80%, you know a drier field with propane distributes heat and dries grain more evenly. With FS Propane, you can increase harvest quality, improve productivity, and lower fuel cost. Propane from FS ensures dependable supply. FS offers services and flexible, convenient payment programs to help keep your mind on your business while they manage your propane tank and supply. For grain drying, choose FS Propane. FS Propane brings the heat.
Join us every Tuesday for Around the Table, brought to you by CHS, where we take a close look at the benefits of cooperative ownership. Every week, we'll host a new guest and discuss how you can get the most from working with your local cooperative. And we'll learn why farmers and ranchers just like you choose cooperatives to help them persevere and prosper. So be sure to tune in each Tuesday or visit cooperativeownership.com to learn more.
At Golden Harvest, our best skill is knowing how to listen. From our Gold Series soybean and game-changing corn portfolios to our expert insights housed in the Illuminate Digital Agronomy platform, everything we offer is an answer to what we've heard from you. This is how we listen.
Copyright 2021 Syngenta. The trademarks or service marks used herein are the property of a Syngenta Group company. All other trademarks are the property of their respective owners.
These acres you've put your life into, your view each harvest morning. While the ag industry changes, this land is meant to be here for your grandkids and then theirs. That's why ADS and drainage contractors across the nation are doing our part to protect America's farm families. We're proud to provide water management solutions that make family farms like yours more profitable, now and for generations to come. Learn more about how we keep families farming at adspipe.com.
Take a look under your bed. Find stuff under there? What about jobs? No? Now try your basement. There's a pair of overalls that overall you're not so into anymore. A perfectly good laptop that hasn't sat in your lap in months. And even more stuff, but still no jobs? Well, you really have both. See, stuff is defined as household articles considered as a group. Sometimes this stuff is no longer needed. Wait, no longer needed? That can't be right. Because remember those jobs you were looking for? Those are really needed. And they're the stuff inside your stuff. Even inside that winter coat that moved with you to Phoenix. Our job is to unlock those jobs, and it starts when you donate your stuff to your local Goodwill. Here's how we do it. When you donate to Goodwill, we sell your stuff to provide job training for people right here in your community. So just by teaming up with Goodwill, you help create jobs. And isn't that worth parting with the leftover keytar from your 80s cover band? Goodwill. Donate stuff, create jobs. Find your nearest donation center at goodwill.org. A message from Goodwill and the Ad Council.
AOA is brought to you by Cenex Matron Synthetic Diesel Engine Oils, oils that run smart.
Information America's farmers and ranchers need to know on AOA. Now, back to Mike Adams.
Welcome back to AOA. Mike Pearson sitting in for Mike Adams today. Combines are running across the Corn Belt. We're getting the crop out of the ground up here in North America. But as we look south of the equator, those crops are just getting planted. Brazil has seen their fall, well, their spring planting season get underway here. They're running a little bit ahead of pace, according to some recent numbers to come out here earlier this week. But in South America, particularly in Brazil and Argentina, weather is what drives things just like they do in this country. To get an understanding of what's happening with the weather situation down there in South America, we're joined in this segment by Ed Valley from Empire Weather. Ed, thanks for taking the time to talk to us today.
How's it going? Hope you're doing well.
Doing very well. Ed, we got to talk about what's happening in Brazil. Earlier this year, we kept hearing reports of the worst drought across Brazil in 90 or 100 or 110 years. It just kept getting worse and worse as the summer wore on. Bring us up to speed. What's happened across some of those key growing regions with regard to that drought in Brazil?
Yeah, that's a great question. And it's been an interesting start to the season. If you had told me we're going to be where we are currently a couple months ago, I would be very happy with where we are, to be honest with you. So a little background, as we headed through the North American summer, so their winter, and into our fall, their spring, we've noticed that there's actually been some pretty decent rainfall in southern Brazil and parts of Argentina. Now, that is a big change from last year. Last year was, just like you said, one of the worst droughts they've had in quite some time that allowed things to be delayed. You know, we didn't have enough rainfall to really allow things to germinate, so a lot of people didn't plant until later in October, and in some cases even later than that, which obviously played a role into the second crop corn season that obviously occurred later on. So there was a lot of pressure this year to get things in on time, right? So we've been monitoring the rainfall and the start of the rainy season here in Brazil, and it's looked like, especially this past weekend, we saw some pretty significant rainfall in Paraná, Santa Catarina and Rio Grande do Sul, which are the three states that make up the southern part of Brazil. So compared to last year, we're doing much better. Now, as we move northward into Mato Grosso, that's that central part of Brazil, they're starting to see the rainy season begin now. So things are even improving up there as well. Some of our contacts, we've heard some pretty good rainfall over the last 7 days. So even they're getting going. So kind of to wrap up that thought, things are much better than they were last year. Could we use a little bit more moisture in central Brazil? Absolutely. But I think comparatively, we're off to a much better start.
You know, one of the things I've been reading about really since the drought got started is river levels in the Paraná River. This is the river that kind of makes the boundary between Argentina and Brazil for a little while. It's where we see a lot of the Argentinian exports get processed and then shipped out of the country. It's that southern South American Mississippi River, from what I've heard. And Ed, it still sounds like they are unable to get fully loaded barges up and down that river. So the drought is still in effect.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. And it's something where even if you get, let's say, 6 inches of rain in a month or something along those lines, that's a great amount of rainfall at once. But when you're trying to fill back up a river that has been so parched over the last 12-plus months, it's going to take some time, right? So I think moving forward, we are going to see additional moisture this week and into next week. So I think things should continue to improve. But I think, like you said there, it's a pretty dire situation, and more moisture is still needed for things to start running correctly.
You know, and I'd like to talk to you about the temperature outlook going forward. And I want to ask about this because earlier this summer for us, winter for the Brazilians, there was a devastating mm-hmm. frost, I think back in July, that came across it. It sort of devastated their coffee industry. And I know temperatures have moderated somewhat, but does a cold snap like that give you any indication of what to expect for temperatures for the rest of the growing season?
Yes, yeah, so that's another really good question. And it's important to note that you're exactly right. These temperatures that we saw in southern Brazil over their winter, in especially July, were some of the coldest we've seen in 25 or 30 years. So that was a very outlier event, if you will. It was a very rare event. And I think a lot of that had to do with the drought. If you think about it, the drier those soils are, the more the temperature can fluctuate, especially at night. You get a cool, calm night, you get those really cold temperatures. And unfortunately, the impacts that come along with that. So that's the first kind of note. It's definitely an outlier event. And as we move forward, to be honest, as we get to this time of the year and beyond, obviously frost will not be a concern. Of course, we have had, though, some pretty significant early season heat in parts of central and southern Brazil that is starting to back off now. And now that the rains are coming, that's a great thing. But as we move forward here, typically, as we head into the late spring and early summertime months down in Brazil, we like to favor the warmest temperatures compared to normal down in Argentina and southern Brazil in a La Nina year, which we're in right now. So moving forward, our expectation is that generally speaking here through our fall, their spring, and into the early part of their summer, the further south you go across production areas, the warmer compared to normal it's going to be. Now up in central Brazil, it's basically a rainforest. So think about weather in southern Florida, for example. It's very warm and very humid throughout the season. So even though they're closer to normal, perhaps, it's still a very warm climate up there. So just because it's near normal doesn't mean it's going to be cool by any means. It just doesn't mean it's going to be as extreme, perhaps, as further down to the south.
Okay, that makes some sense. And Ed, you mentioned La Nina. What kind of precipitation effects do you expect to see as, or I guess I should say, if a La Nina situation should develop out there in the Pacific Ocean?
Yeah, so that's another really interesting question because it's hard to give a blanket answer with that. So last year, if you remember, we were also in a La Nina, and the concern, of course, was for all that dry time down in southern Brazil and Argentina. And as we headed through the season, it was certainly that way, but I would argue that at times we did see sufficient precipitation. So it's a situation where, generally speaking, when you're in La Nina, the drier risk is found in southern Brazil and Argentina. So typical, just like the warmer risk is found down there, that's where the wetter or the drier risk will be found as well. So generally speaking, southern Brazil down into Argentina, a little bit below normal precipitation risk, which obviously would not be great news for the Paraná River, of course. However, the further north you go, the correlation to La Niña and precipitation starts to drop. So in central Brazil, we're not necessarily expecting very dry conditions versus areas further to the south. So further south, drier and warmer.
Okay. And, you know, one of the things we've got here in the United States that I know a lot of growers take a look at, I know us media folks talk about almost incessantly during the growing season, is the drought monitor. That's a great tool for us to add a quick glance, be able to see who's feeling the worst stress from moisture. Is there a similar tool for Brazil specifically or South America more broadly? Is there a way we can go to keep track of these issues?
Yeah, absolutely. So there's a couple tools we like to use. There's one through the University of Nebraska at Lincoln in collaboration with NASA. That one's called the NASA Grace product. And that one I put out on my social media all the time. I think it's a great tool. It has pretty much every domain across the country, or excuse me, across the world. It allows us to look at not only the surface soil moisture, but also the root zone soil moisture and the entire profile. So that's one of my favorite tools to use because it not only gives you North America, but it gives you global weather and it gives you multiple layers of information. So that's definitely one I would recommend.
And could you tell us the name of that one more time?
Yes, that is the NASA Grace product through the University of Nebraska at Lincoln.
All right, Ed, well, we got you on the line. Of course, La Nina is developing. Is that your understanding of the situation in the Pacific right now?
It sure is. We sent out a note to our clients earlier today that explained just that. We're definitely seeing La Nina increase in intensity here over the next few months as we get into the kind of the heart of our winter, their summer. That's kind of when we're a little bit more uncertain. It may start to weaken as we head towards our spring, but given the 6 month lead time, there's still quite a bit of uncertainty there.
Lots of things to watch for, Ed, as this year goes forward. Are we going to see more moisture here in the Pacific, or excuse me, in the Northern Plains as that La Nina develops?
Absolutely. And I am absolutely seeing here towards the middle of October, I'm thinking we're going to see some additional moisture risk and maybe some harvest delays as that moisture returns up there.
All right. We'll have to keep an eye on the sky as always. Ed Valley from Empire Weather. Thanks so much for taking the time to talk to us today.
Thank you, Mike.
And we'll be back with more AOA right after this.
AOA is brought to you by Cinex Premium Diesel. Cinex Premium Diesel. Diesel that doesn't mess around.
I've been farming my whole life.
I don't need somebody to come out here and state the obvious.
I don't need anybody to explain my farm to me.
My local co-op works with CHS, and they know what I need when I need it.
A global network of support,
local expertise,
and valuable market options.
We need a co-op that's here for us.
So we can own every day.
When you're an owner of a local cooperative connected to CHS, you get local expertise, a proven efficient supply chain, and global market access. Learn more at cooperativeownership.com.
Informing America's farmers and ranchers. That's our goal at AOA. Each weekday, you get an hour of the latest takes from people who know agriculture, the policymakers, and the people who have the inside scoop on what's happening behind closed doors. People who have their finger on the pulse of Washington and agriculture around the world. AOA is your daily source for all the information you need to stay in the know. Informing America's farmers and ranchers. AOA.
You're listening to AOA. I'm Kirsten Rall. The USDA estimated that the U.S. soybean harvest had surpassed the corn harvest. They estimated the bean harvest at 34% complete versus the 26% five-year average, the U.S. corn harvest at 29% complete versus the 22% five-year average. Winter wheat planting is nearly halfway with 47% of planting complete through Sunday. Corn was supported by the USDA's daily export sales notice of 426 6,800 tons of corn to Mexico. This morning, wheat and corn are trading lower on the Board of Trade with higher soybeans. December corn trading 2 1/2 lower at 538.5 cents. March down 3 1/2 at 546.5 cents. For soybeans, November trading 6 3/4 cents higher at 1242. January up 6.5 cents at 1253. For wheat, Chicago wheat December trading 3.5 cents lower at 753. Kansas City wheat December down 9.5 cents at 744.75. Minneapolis spring wheat December down 3 cents at 927.5 cents. The March contract trading 3 1/2 cents lower at 917.5 cents. While it is possible that we may see some trade develop today, tomorrow seems more likely for significant cash cattle business. Asking prices are around $125 in the south, but not yet established in the north. Beef cutouts are expected to be mixed with light to moderate box movement. December live cattle trading 15 cents higher at 128.20. The February contract up 50 at 132.90. For feeder cattle, November up $1.07 at 157.10. January trading 57 cents higher at 156.20. For lean hogs, the December contract trading 70 cents lower at 82.40. The February contract down 72 at 84.77. You're listening to AOA. I'm Kirsten Rall.
54. So, basically, it's too late to start saving for retirement, right?
Not right. Starting to save, even in your 50s, can really make a difference.
Well, right now, saving seems hard to wrap my head around. Plus, with the way this year's been going...
Hey, listen, it's okay. You still got this. Just go to aceyourretirement.org. It's an online tool from AARP that can help you get your retirement savings on track no matter your age. It's free and only takes about 3 minutes.
I like 3 minutes.
Yeah. At aceyourretirement.org, you'll chat with Avo, the friendly digital retirement coach. Just answer a few questions and you'll get a personalized plan and tips to help boost your retirement savings. Tips that are easy to understand and tailored to your lifestyle.
I like that too.
Plus, it's sponsored by AARP, so you know they got your back. Just head to aceyourretirement.org and make your plan to start saving for retirement.
Thanks.
That's aceyourretirement.org. A message from AARP and the Ad Council.
AOA is brought to you by Cenex Matron Synthetic Diesel Engine Oils. Oils that run smart.
Information America's farmers and ranchers need to know on AOA. Now, back to Mike Adams.
Welcome back to Adams on Agriculture. Mike Pearson here filling in for the day. You know, hardly a week goes by where we in agriculture don't hear news of another big commodities purchase from China. This has been the case stretching back to about last August. We've seen China move into the ag space in a big way, gobbling up soybeans, just really is almost as fast as we can get them loaded on ships. The China-U.S. trade dynamic has been a topic in agriculture for some time. We saw this kick up in importance during the Trump administration as the trade war got underway, and things have been kind of still. They've kind of been at a status quo in the world of international trade since President Joe Biden took office there in January. Well, yesterday, we got our first hint that things might be changing. To get a handle on what all is happening in the world of international trade, we're going to be joined in this segment by Simon Lester. He's a trade attorney, founder of the China Trade Monitor. He's previously worked at the World Trade Organization, and he has taught trade law at University of Michigan and at American University in Washington, D.C. Simon, thanks for taking the time to talk to us today.
No problem. Glad to be here with you.
Let's talk a little bit. Let's go back. Before yesterday, we heard comments from the new U.S. trade rep, Catherine Tai, talking about the Biden approach to trade. But let's go back to last Friday. Say, what was the status quo for trade with China here over the past 2 years?
So the status quo is that the Trump administration had concerns about various Chinese trade practices and imposed tariffs as a way to induce China to make changes. And what that led to was China retaliating with tariffs of their own, and for what your listeners will be interested in, I think, is the tariffs on agriculture. So to deal with the tariffs that U.S. producers suddenly faced when trying to sell to China, the U.S. and China negotiated a trade agreement that's generally referred to as the Phase One Agreement. And as part of that, China agreed to buy more agricultural products. The tariffs had led to a diminishment of the sales to China. This kind of restored things to their previous level. So where we had been up through last Friday was this Phase One Agreement that the Trump administration had signed with China that dealt with agriculture purchases and a number of what are generally referred to as structural issues like intellectual property protection or financial services, access to the Chinese market for financial services. So that's where we were.
And under the Phase One Agreement, it sounds as though, I mean, we hear the reports every day of China stepping in and buying large quantities of soybeans, decent quantities of corn. They've purchased a lot of pork from us, and they're growing their purchases of beef. And yet, in spite of all of that, China really hasn't met its conditions or its commitments under this Phase One Agreement, have they?
Well, so the figures that were written into the agreement are generally considered by, so I'm a lawyer, not an economist, but by the economists who look at these things as something that couldn't be met. They were set at levels that China was supposed to buy significantly more than they'd ever bought before. And so I don't think that anyone realistically expected China to meet those commitments. I think the question was more, are they going to bring their purchases up to a previous high level? They had, as I said, they'd gone down during the tariff escalation. So that there are people who are tracking whether China has met the commitments, and they are saying, oh, China has not. But I think honestly, both sides knew that the commitments were set at levels that China just couldn't possibly purchase them. We don't have that much to sell even of the amounts that were committed. So you could look at this and say, hey, China's not meeting its commitments. But I think more realistically, the commitments weren't designed to be met, and were more just a way to get China to buy more. And they did. If you want to get technical about it, yes, the U.S. could say, hey, you haven't met your commitments, you haven't complied with the deal, therefore we're going to take some action against you. But again, I don't think those commitments were realistic. There was any way realistically to meet the commitments.
Okay, so China has stepped up their purchases, certainly of ag products, and I know a number of other products in their commitments. They have stepped up purchases, and they're getting kind of close on some of these. I want to bring us up to speed now, Simon. So that was the Trump administration. Big change in policy as it related to our interactions with China on the trade front. During the election, it sounded as though, from a number of the trade experts that I follow, the expectation was Biden might be a return to quote unquote normalcy in the trade. Maybe we'd see some tariffs get rolled back. We'd see more of a dialogue begin with China. And then we just had silence from the Biden administration on trade for the first 10 months of the administration. And yesterday, Katherine Tai gave a speech and she addressed how things might proceed with China. Can you give us the bullet points? What jumped out at you in Ambassador Tai's remarks yesterday?
Yeah, I will get to that. Let me give you some background. So I think the difficulty the Biden administration is having on trade, and the reason they said so little, is because they have this internal split between the progressive wing and the moderate wing. And the progressives really don't want to do anything on trade. They're against the usual trade negotiations and trade liberalization. And so to keep them happy in the midst of all the other domestic political fights going on, I think the Biden administration has just shied away from trade in general. They just don't want to talk about it. They don't want to do anything about it. But they are getting a lot of complaints from people saying, hey, what's your policy? You've been sitting around. You said you were going to review the Trump administration's China trade policy. When are you going to draw some conclusions? When are you going to come up with a policy? And so I think in response to those complaints they were getting, they decided, well, we have to say something. So yesterday, U.S. Trade Representative Katherine Tai got out there, and she said something. Now, what did she say exactly? I think that most people have said, and I agree, it was a bit underwhelming in terms of articulating a clear policy going forward. Basically, she said, we are going to stick with the existing framework, which is the Phase One Agreement, and we're going to try to enforce that. But she didn't say how. She didn't specify. Is it the purchase commitments? Is it the other substantive obligations? She didn't really have much to say about that. She said they're going to engage at a high level with, Chinese trade officials, which is fine. It makes sense to do that. I mean, it's not clear why it took 7 or 8 months to get to that. It seems like that could have been done earlier. And he talks a lot about working with allies. I think that's the one area where you could say, okay, well, maybe that's something different than what the Trump administration did. The Trump administration was famously fighting with a lot of allies, the Europeans, the Canadians, the Mexicans, really anyone on trade in particular, anyone he all around the world. And the Biden administration, I think, is trying to work through some of those fights. And they have made some actual progress there. They sat down with Europeans to talk about trade and technology broadly. We've resolved, at least temporarily, fights over subsidies to Boeing and Airbus. They're working on a solution to tariffs we're imposing on European steel and aluminum, and steel and aluminum for other countries as well. So I think that when you sum it all up, again, this is something, that the Biden administration felt like they had to, say something here. And, they called this a starting point, and they said they're going to approach China with their concerns and see how China reacts. So I think that they were slow to act, but they have finally gotten around to it, and we will see where it leads. But there are not really any big changes for the moment.
One of the things that Ambassador Tai mentioned in her remarks yesterday, and I might need you to put your lawyer hat on here for this one, Simon. She said, quote, second, we will start a targeted tariff exclusion process to ensure that the existing enforcement structure optimally serves our economic interests. What is a targeted tariff exclusion process? What does that mean?
So as I mentioned, under the Trump administration, one of the things the Trump people did was they imposed tariffs pursuant to a particular statute called Section 301. And, so they did it on, I forget the exact number, but it's over $300 billion worth of Chinese goods. They had this whole list of products they were going to impose tariffs on. But what they do as part of that is they give U.S. companies an opportunity to say, hey, this tariff will actually really hurt me, and can I get out of it for these particular imports that I'm doing? And so you can apply. If you are importing something from China, like let's say you need some Chinese batteries in the car you're building or some other, piece of electronic equipment that you're putting together, you can then apply for an exclusion. And this is something that had been going on under the Trump administration, but it expired. And so, there were many U.S. companies who were saying, hey, we're suddenly getting hit by these tariffs. We'd gotten an exclusion, but we're suddenly getting hit again. Can you start this back up so we can they're basically accepting the general principle that the U.S. was going to impose tariffs on China. But for particular tariffs that really hurt particular businesses, they want to be able to get rid of those tariffs. So the generally speaking, the tariffs will stay, but if you can show that you in particular are being hurt by them for some business you're running, they will consider getting rid of them. So it's important to a small number of people who are affected and can make the case that the tariff should be called off, but it doesn't really, undermine the general principle that, the U.S. and China continue to have lots of tariffs on each other as part of this trade war.
So, Simon, if this, is the trade war going to be restarting? And if we start implementing tariffs on Chinese goods again, can we expect retaliation from China? And will they target ag, do you think?
I think if we impose new tariffs, we could expect retaliation, and I think they would target ag. I mean, I think everybody knows that, when the U.S. imposes tariffs on you, it's good to target ag, because then the ag producers talk to their member of Congress, and their member of Congress goes to the administration, so it's effective. But I don't know that we'll really start it. I don't think the trade war will really pick up. I think for the moment we're just in the status quo. So, if you think we're in a trade war now, then yes, it will continue. But I don't think it's going to get worse. It's not about to intensify. I think we're in the status quo for the next few months.
All right. We will keep an eye. The world of trade continues to change. When AOA returns, we're going to talk harvest in Northeast Iowa.
AOA is brought to you by Cinex Premium Diesel. Cinex Premium Diesel, diesel that doesn't mess around.
I'll take dig a little, learn a lot for 30 bushels.
Soft and crumbly. Tom.
How does healthy soil feel to the touch?
Correct.
Dig a little for 40 bushels.
Sweet and earthy. Tom.
What does healthy soil smell like?
Yes. Go again.
Dig a little for 50 bushels.
Dark, porous, and alive. Tom.
What does healthy soil look like?
You win.
Understanding the basics and benefits of healthy soil can make your farm a winner too, through lower input costs, better yields, and drought protection, which can lead to a healthier bottom line for your business. Contact your local Natural Resources Conservation Service office today to find out how you can unlock the secrets in your soil. This message brought to you by USDA's Natural Resources Conservation Service and this radio station.
As an organ donor, your story doesn't have to end. The good in you can live on. In fact, you could save up to 8 lives with your gifts. Your heart could keep beating. Your kidneys could keep filtering. And your intestines could keep on digesting for others. And that's not all. You can improve the lives of 50 more people as an eye and tissue donor, restoring sight and health. And you're not just helping out the person receiving the transplant. You're touching whole families with your life-saving gift. Register in minutes. Just go to organdonor.gov. You'll be happy you did. And just maybe, someone else will be happy too. Sign up today. Go to organdonor.gov. It saves lives. U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Health Resources and Services Administration.
This is Around the Table, where we explore the benefits of cooperative ownership. And today we're joined again by Will Stafford, CHS Washington representative, to discuss the latest happenings in farm policy. And Will, there's certainly a lot going on. I wanted to look at something that we're hearing more and more about, and that is possibly quite an increase in funding for conservation programs. What are you hearing?
Details are trickling out about the Democrat plan for additional funding to conservation programs in the reconciliation package that's currently being negotiated in Congress. So this plan that's been pushed for by Chairwoman of the Senate Ag Committee, Debbie Stabenow, would cost about $28 billion and would include $5 billion in direct payments to producers who establish cover crops, which would be about $25 per acre up to 1,000 acres per producer through fiscal year 2026. In addition, there's about $9 billion for the EQIP program through 2026, $4 billion for the Conservation Stewardship Program, $1.5 billion for the Agricultural Conservation Easement Program, and $7.5 billion for the Regional Conservation Partnership Program.
So when we look at this increase in funding and how it could impact the next farm bill, does that change baselines and does that impact anything in the next farm bill, you think?
It absolutely could change the baseline in the next farm bill for the conservation title. Which would absolutely impact those discussions and probably make it a little bit easier for the conservation title to be passed. It's usually one of the titles of the farm bill that there's a lot of debate around. With that being said, I expect the agriculture committees to officially kick off their farm bill reauthorization process sometime in the next calendar year.
That's Will Stafford, CHS Washington representative, joining us on Around the Table. Learn more about the benefits of co-op ownership from CHS at cooperativeownership.com.
These acres you've put your life into, your view each harvest morning. While the ag industry changes, this land is meant to be here for your grandkids and then theirs. That's why ADS and drainage contractors across the nation are doing our part to protect America's farm families. We're proud to provide water management solutions that make family farms like yours more profitable, now and for generations to come. Learn more about how we keep families farming at adspipe.com.
At Golden Harvest, our best skill is knowing how to listen. From our Gold Series soybean and game-changing corn portfolios to our expert insights housed in the Illuminate Digital Agronomy platform, everything we offer is an answer to what we've heard from you. This is how we listen.
Copyright 2021 Syngenta. The trademarks or service marks used herein are the property of a Syngenta Group company. All other trademarks are the property of their respective owners.
AOA is brought to you by Cenex Matron Synthetic Diesel Engine Oils. Oils that run smart.
Information America's farmers and ranchers need to know on AOA. Now, back to Mike Adams.
Welcome back to AOA. Mike Pearson filling in for Mike Adams today. It's time to take a look at harvest. Joining me to close out today's show is Jeff Ryan. Jeff is a cow-calf producer, a cattle feeder, and a grain grower outside Cresco in the northeast part of the state of Iowa. Jeff, how's harvest looking up in your part of the world?
It's going fairly well, Mike. We're getting a good start on corn. We've got quite a few dairies in the area, so they usually take corn silage, earlage. We haven't gotten that far, I don't think, progress-wise on dry corn for a lot of people yet.
How was the silage cutting, the earlage? How did it go this year?
For the most part, I think people were fairly impressed with yields. We stayed pretty dry during most of July, hardly any rain at all in a lot of places at that time. So August and a little bit of September caught us up, and hopefully we'll make up a significant difference, because, boy, it did not look pretty there for a while in June and July.
No, it didn't. And, you know, I think that's true for you and for corn growers across the country. Jeff, let's talk disease. Was there much disease pressure this year in Northeast Iowa? Was there anything that jumped out at you?
The one thing that I think probably everyone did not expect was armyworms in September. Mm. We have the usual problems. Corn on corn, we'll typically see a few more disease problems with plants, but all of a sudden armyworms showed up out of nowhere, and there were sprayers going all the time in mid to late September, and we just have not had a problem with that. Typically when we do, that's been in a really dry situation, which it was not this year for those.
Is that making folks concerned about the reappearance of armyworms this next year, Jeff?
I think it probably is, simply because we don't have a lot of experience with it, so we don't know. And the aggressiveness of them when they did show up was a little bit disturbing for some people. I know I've heard from other people around the Midwest who said, we didn't see anything, and 2 days later, man, that field is gone. It looked like hail damage, basically.
Yeah, I saw a number of folks, and I saw people really with alfalfa, that particularly in the southern part of the country, they were showing these beautiful alfalfa fields, and then a week later, yeah, all the leaves were chewed off, and it was just armyworms that had swept in.
Yeah, and that was almost the refreshing part, was that hopefully it's only alfalfa, because at least we can get into those fields to spray them, but boy, if they turn to grass too, you know, there's a lot of pasture in this area where you can't physically get in with a sprayer to get it sprayed.
How does a soybean harvest look up in your part of the state, Jeff? Neighbors running hard?
They've been a little bit slow this week. We've been kind of overcast, and people that were getting, yesterday at the co-op, I know they said that some guys that were getting in those 10 and 11 beans because of the overcast stuff, they were coming in at 14 and 15, so nobody could run for a couple of days. But for the most part, we're probably somewhere around 30 to 50% done, I would guess. And yields have been pretty respectable. I don't know that anybody has a lot done yet for whole field averages, but I've heard some reports in the 60s. And moisture, surprisingly, I think the lowest ones they've seen were 10.5, 10.3, somewhere there. So they didn't get super dry on us. They did end up with a lot of people who talked about dry beans and really tough green stems.
Yes, that seems to be a really common theme this year. It's just a challenge getting those beans to run through the combine.
Yeah, it is.
So, Jeff, I know you have just kind of gotten started on corn harvest. You've hauled your first load to town. I think, did you get that done yesterday?
Yeah, I got a few in there yesterday, and we're still working on a little bit more today again.
Well, how are corn yields shaping up so far?
I think we'll be in pretty good shape that way compared to APH. Quality is the other thing that's been really good. We sit in an area that tends to run cool from time to time, so light test weight can be a problem, but that does not look to be an issue. The guys at the feed mill said that they were to the point where they were going to run out of feed because a lot of the big dairies did not have their corn acres ready to go yet for dry corn, so they're having to call in to get feed ground and delivered, and they said, you know, nobody's really running very hard on corn yet, so we aren't getting much into dry.
Interesting. Jeff, let's talk about that market with the dairies up there. And I know you feed cattle as well, so you've got a market right there in your backyard. How are prices hanging around? What's basis doing in Northeast Iowa?
It was really firm through a good share of September and then softened up quite a bit the closer we got to harvestable acres. There was one day there where the feed mill in Cresco was short and they were paying 80 cents over Cedar Rapids, which has always been kind of the gold standard of high price in eastern Iowa for that matter.
Yeah. And are you seeing pretty strong demand from the ethanol component as well?
We are. They've had to hang in pretty tight to compete with some of the feed mills. And it's been decent. I don't know from a margin standpoint how much more room they have to pay for more, but you can see it in basis bumps every once in a while when you know they're getting a little bit short. All of a sudden, they'll cut it 8-10 cents in a day just to get some bushels in.
Jeff, on the cattle front, are you a fall calver?
No, we're still kind of a late spring, May and June. So those calves, I just sent the last group of last year's calves about 10 days ago or so. So I got lucky on those and got out just before the next downturn.
How are they performing this year? I mean, with the dry weather up there, I imagine they did pretty well, or did you lose some pasture?
Well, we ended up, I had corn silage left over from last year, so that fit in the schedule just about perfect. So I played purebred breeder basically and fed them like purebred animals instead of straight grass. And we did okay because we went almost 30 days with no rain. And in a rotational pasture system, that does not work when you're not on 8 to 10 feet of black dirt. We have scenic hills here, and scenic hills usually have limestone not far underneath the surface.
Yeah, it's tough to store a lot of moisture in that limestone. It's tough for that perennial grasses to get their roots down through it. Jeff Ryan
exactly.
From Two Guys Farming up around Cresco, Iowa. Thanks so much for taking the time to talk to us this week.
Thank you, Mike.
And folks, we'll be back tomorrow with more Adams on Agriculture. Mike Adams will be back in the big seat. Thanks so much for tuning in today, and we look forward to bringing you up to speed on agriculture tomorrow.
AOA is brought to you by Cinex Premium Diesel. Cinex Premium Diesel. Diesel that doesn't mess around.